favorites, the podcast.
All right, thanks, Chad.
I'm Chad Millman.
Okay.
And joining me today,
he's not done,
are my beautiful baby boys, Blackjack, Fletcher, and Paula Duca.
Thanks for that intro, Chad. It's the first contact we've had in quite a while. As Chad mentioned, joining me today is the one and only, an American original, Paula Duca. Paulie, how we doing?
We're doing absolutely wonderful since I haven't won a bet since Vietnam. But other than that, we're doing okay.
Wait, do you mean just since the time period of Vietnam, or were you betting on the Vietnam War?
If I bet on the Vietnam War, we would have lost. I would have lost.
Paul, we did lose.
Yeah. Exactly. I would have bet on the United States.
Oh, shit. We're off to a hot start.
I mean, like, it is. Ever since, like, no exaggeration, ever since that Purdue game, you talk about, like, our people in our company, Worldwide Wob, Lauren Jaffe, they love car chases. I love chasing and gambling, and I'm chasing so bad right now, it's ridiculous. I'm going 180 miles an hour, and I love it.
Oh, shit, Paulie. We're off to a good start here.
Oh, we just started, my brother.
All right, well, why don't you tell us a little bit about, give me your take on the national title game. We had Virginia and Texas Tech. Virginia pulls it out, avenges their first-round loss from last year. National champions, how do you feel about how everything went down there?
Worst national champions in the last 20 years.
What?
Come on, man. They got dead lucky against Purdue with a friggin' rebound that went all the way to the mascot, and then it got thrown back, and a guy with white hair throws it in to send it into overtime.
What?
Then they get a bullcrap foul
hair?
Against
you mean
Auburn.
Diakite? That's blonde, yeah, buddy.
Whatever it is, it's bleached and he looks ugly. They lost against Auburn on a joke of a foul with Guy after a double dribble. Well, yeah, I mean, they should have lost to Auburn. They lost to Auburn, okay? The double dribble, gone. And then it was literally one of the worst, if not the worst, officiated national title game in my life I've ever seen. Guy traveled over three times. There was a phantom foul in that game that CBS decided, you know what? We don't even want to show that because Bill Raftery and Grant Hill were hanging from the officials' nuts, which I could not understand. Not one call. You tell me one call that went Texas Tech's way. Name it.
I mean, there was probably one or two down the stretch. But
okay,
not
then
many.
How many went Virginia's way?
A lot.
It was a joke. The last two games, I mean, Bruce Pearl handled it. They both handled it, Chris Beard and Bruce Pearl. But here's the deal. I've been in many situations, and I've never won a World Series. I've been in a Game 7. People know that. We lost to the Cardinals. I've been in tight situations.
Thanks a lot, Beltran.
Yeah, exactly. I'm the one that walked before that Met fans. Remember that. when you have tight games, like, what happened to you have to get murdered at the end of the game for it to be a foul? Like, now,
well, that wasn't the case in Virginia Auburn. You didn't have to get murdered there.
No, exactly. And how about last night? Last game of the season. And the guy in Indiana's playing Atlanta. Guy calls a foul with 1 second left. The game means nothing. And the guy makes all three free throws and Indiana wins the game. Like, the officials have to make an impact. The officials have to be known. It's just like the umpires. Like, we're having this issue with Ron Culpa. How are these guys still officiating?
Stinks.
Oh, no, but he incites riots. He's out there to show the fans, hey, come see me. No one gives a shit about Ron Culpa.
Did you ever have any run-ins with Ron Culpa?
Oh, 100%. He's most of the umpires that you get are frustrated athletes. I tweeted it out. He's upset he's not in the big leagues. That's okay. The bottom line. So he gets to umpire in it.
All right, so you're not high on Virginia. I mean, they were the number one defensive team in the country. So
I get that, but you're trying to tell me they shouldn't have lost those two games.
Pauly, whether they should or shouldn't have, they didn't. So,
but they were not assisted by officiating.
I'm not going to say they should have lost to Texas Tech.
Here's the problem is you're slanted because you had Virginia in both games.
Yeah, I did.
Exactly. And here's the thing. I even had Auburn to cover. I won that game. I didn't want it to go into overtime. I wanted the kid to make all three free throws. I had under and I had Auburn. It was the best thing that could have happened to me, but Auburn should have won the game.
But as a sportsman, you were upset.
Yeah, I'm upset because it's not the right call. Yeah. Auburn lost their best player. They're on a run of a lifetime, and they got screwed. They got dead screwed.
All right, well, that's college basketball. You mentioned Indiana and Atlanta last night, the final night of the NBA regular season. I'm going to ask you a question, Paulie. It might wind up being rhetorical. Can anybody beat Golden State?
No, I just don't think so. It's what are they up to now? Minus 250? Is it gone up more?
I mean, does it matter what the number is? Yeah, I mean, they're the prohibitive favorite. Let me throw something out at you and see what you think about this. I think there's one team out there that can beat them. And I think it's the Philadelphia 76ers.
That's it. You're right. You're right.
And the reason I think that Sixers team reminds me a little bit of when the Pistons played the Lakers team that had Karl Malone and Gary Payton, and they were stacked. Philadelphia has Ben Simmons, J.J. Redick, Tobias Harris, Jimmy Butler, and Joel Embiid. And what that means is they can play any style they want. Yeah. They can run if they want to run with Golden State. They've got excellent three-point shooting. People don't realize Tobias Harris is a fantastic three-point shooter. I think he was the biggest addition at the trade deadline that nobody really talks about.
One of the most underrated.
100%.
He is one of the most underrated. And he had his coming out party in Detroit to tell everybody.
And let's be honest here, okay? As much as people like Boogie Cousins, he's not going to be able to stop Joel Embiid down low. Now, the Sixers are going to have their hands full in the Eastern Conference, but if they should make it to the finals, I think that's a team that could be able to beat Golden State.
I think I would agree with you there, and the reason why is Jimmy Butler. And I know he's been a malcontent in a lot of different places, but he seems like that guy, he's the mini Dwayne Wade, that when the chips are on the table, he's going to show up. He's got that I don't care, step on the throat attitude. He'll get on these guys. And I think during playoff time, he might make the difference there in Philadelphia. And like, how can you take anybody out of the West? Why wouldn't you take somebody out of the East to at least get
nobody
the chance
out of the West?
Yeah. And you know what, Blackjack? You got to take somebody out of the East to try to beat him because at least you'll get to the finals and get a shot.
Houston's shot was last year. They pissed it away. They're not going to beat them this year. Listen, the Rockets are not as good this year as they were last year. So they're not winning that series.
No, they're not.
And I don't want to hear about Denver. I like Denver. They're fun. They can't beat Golden State 4 out of 7. Who else are we talking about? Portland? I mean, like, really? Like, what are we doing here? The Western Conference is a joke. People talk about how great it is, how stacked it is. You know what? It is a foregone conclusion that the Golden State Warriors are winning that conference.
You know, the Brooklyn and Philadelphia starts on Saturday.
Saturday, yeah.
Yeah, first
half
game of
the
day.
Starts Saturday.
Yeah, and I the way Orlando's playing, I'd be a little scared,
Paulie,
Toronto.
No.
I'm telling you. I'm not saying they're going to win.
They got fucking Kawhi Leonard, Kyle Lowry. They're one of the deepest teams in the league. They're not getting beat by the Magic.
I'm not saying that's going to – I'm saying you could play this game to go – or a series to go a little longer. And Kyle Lowry needs to mix in a salad, okay? The chubbiest point guard in the game.
Chubbiest? I mean, have you seen Raymond Felton?
Huh? Well, Raymond Felton's 108. Raymond Felton was in the barbershop scene in Coming to America.
John Wall got fat, too.
He did?
Yeah.
No, not John Wall with all that dedication he has. Best backcourt of all time? Him and Bradley Beal?
All right, so that's our NBA talk. We've also got NHL playoffs going on, Paulie. Tell me, who do you think's going to win the Stanley Cup?
I have no clue. But
come on, give me a team.
All I know is I heard the New York Islanders score from Century City, California. I mean, it was unreal. I wish I was there.
Hot, baby. They're
they are hot. They are very, very hot. And I'm going to root for them. Although, I am rooting for them in the Golden Knights, but I'll tell you
there
what.
There you go.
Tampa Bay is rolling right now.
Paulie, they lost last night.
I understand, but I think now you can take the value. They lost, and I think now you can get maybe plus value on them. And listen, they score.
It's still not going to be plus money. Yeah, they were
probably,
they were minus 400 favorites coming into the season.
I know. So what would they be now? Down
225. 195 is what I would Matt Ford's telling me.
Yeah, maybe that's too much in hockey. but you know what? I'm rooting
hey,
for
Maddie,
the Golden
Knights. Golden Knights at right now? They lost game one last night, got their asses beat.
Yeah.
Plus 162. There's the value, buddy, right there. No, the Penguins can suck it. The Islanders are going to win that series. The Golden Knights are plus 162.
That's telling you something right there, that the one team that lost, the Penguins, is 109. That's just all public money because they're just expecting
the They don't believe in the
two.
Islanders, Paul. They don't believe in the power of the Coliseum.
They don't. They don't believe the powers of makeshift chairs and broken stuff that's going on there in the Coliseum, even though they fixed it up. Like, is it like okay to like jog and walk around the Coliseum? Is that a good area?
I mean, I've never jogged around the Coliseum. The area around it is not a great area. It's Hempstead. So
yeah, I used to stay at the Long Island Marriott right next to it.
Right, with what was that, Champs Sports Bar in there?
Oh yeah, I've been there a couple times.
They got I imagine you have.
Oh, they got a great big salad.
Yeah. All right. So that's we're making the rounds here in sports today. So let's keep it going. Baseball. This is your bread and butter, brother. What are you noticing here in the second week of the baseball season? What stands out to you?
That I'm getting crushed.
All right. Other than your personal gambling, Paul, stands out to you?
Runs. I've never seen anything like it.
Yeah,
2 days ago.
A lot of runs. You're right.
2 days ago, blackjack, 14 games. 12 games went over. And one of the games that went under was the Colorado game that was set at 11, and they scored 8 runs, or 10 and a half, and they scored 8 runs. Yesterday calmed a little bit. I think it was like 8 and 6. But the bullpens are awful. I know John Heyman, who I respect, he tweeted out yesterday, like, why isn't anybody signed Craig Kimbrel? Well, money's an issue, but... And he stated like 7 teams' bullpens. Like, you could go over 15 teams' bullpens. They are just
atrocious.
Atrocious. And here's the thing.
Tell me the thing. It
is that all these agents and all these teams were so worried about collusion and so worried. Well, I told you from the beginning, the ball has been juiced. It's an absolute joke. There are balls. Dodger Stadium is a launching pad. I watched Jacob DeGrom. He gave up 4 home runs to dead center field at Citi Field.
Yeah, that shocking.
Okay, now let me get
to the Minnesota Twins.
Okay, this is, let me put things into perspective.
Fucking Byron Buxton.
Dead center field at Citi Field and Shea Stadium is about the same. It's a graveyard. That was Carlos Delgado land, Sean Green land. Not Kiki Hernandez and these kind of guys' lands, okay? There's guys hitting balls 500 feet, while guys that were on rocket fuel back in the day weren't even hitting the ball that far. So, and they're scoring
all
these
runs. Did you
ever
hit one out to dead center in Shea or City?
In City, one time. And it was the best ball I ever hit in my life.
Now, who'd you hit it off of?
Come
on.
Dig. I'm digging, and it's Bobby Jones, who threw the gem in the World Series, which a lot of people forget about, at about 78 miles an hour, I think was a trade, and I don't know who he came up with, but I want to say Bobby Jones, he was with the Rockies, the African-American Bobby Jones, but I want to say he originally signed with
all right, let's,
the Mets.
All right, so you hit one out there. All right, let's move on here. I'm going to give you 3 teams that have started the year out very poorly. And I want you to tell me which one you have the most concerns about right now.
Well, you have to have concerns.
Hold on. I haven't given you the teams yet. These are all 3-win teams. The Colorado Rockies at 3-9. The Chicago Cubs at 3-8. And the Boston Red Sox at 3-9. Which one should I be most concerned about?
Well, I would say probably the Cubs, because I think they're toast anyway. Listen, John Lester, how much more can you get out of John Lester? I mean, Jose Quintana has not thrown well. And the problem that I have with all this, usually in April, it's cold. It has not been a cold April. That's why you're seeing a lot of runs. And the Cubs are still struggling hitting-wise, but their pitching is just giving up way too many runs. Their bullpen's a mess. And then the Red Sox. Listen, Chris Sale is –
Let me ask you this. In all seriousness, he looks kind of shot right now. And, like, people have compared it to previous springs in the past. it's not the same. I mean, he's got nothing on this fastball. How in the hell do the Red Sox give him a 5-year extension when he's throwing nothing right now? Like, what is going on?
I think here's what's going on. He went under the scope. Okay, for you to sign a contract that big, you got to go through a physical. So he obviously went through the MRI. There's no structural damage in his elbow, or there's no structural damage maybe in his shoulder, or they wouldn't have given him the money. The problem is he's now dealing with dead arm. And then I see people like Karabas, who are Red Sox, saying, oh, Chris Sale hit 95. All you guys shut the fuck up. Let me give you a little secret, okay? Kevin Brown, towards the end of his career, when I was catching him, he looked up at the miles per hour constantly because he would want to know how hard he was throwing, how his ball was sinking, this and that. And it used to bug the hell out of me because when he would hit 91, 92, he knew that he just didn't have that extra umph anymore and he was starting to get hit. So I went up to the freaking guy that does the miles per hour thing and said, listen, every time he throws a fastball, will you please put 96 or 97 up there so I don't have to, so let's keep his confidence up and he thinks he's throwing that hard? Because if he
Hold on.
Keeps...
Wait a second. Wait a
yes,
second.
Yes, this is a true story.
You actually manipulated the gun reading at a ballpark.
Yep. So that my pitcher would stop looking at it.
Just because Kevin Brown was such a delicate mental figure that you felt the need to have that gun show 96-97.
I wanted the confidence in his head that, like, okay, I got my 96-97. Yes, they did it.
Jesus.
But that's what you – sometimes – listen, the mental psyche of a pitcher, like, it doesn't matter if you throw – okay, I'm not going to say that. It matters if you throw 99, but, like, you can still get guys out. He had so much movement at 91-92. Sometimes when the ball's thrown a little bit harder at 98, 99, the movement gets taken out of it. So when he threw 91, 92, I actually sometimes liked him a little bit better because his split finger and his sinker moved a little bit more. But he had such this mental block that he had to throw 95, 96, 97, and he would look up after every pitch. And then, so then I would find the what was the tick in his mind. I'm like, what do you want to hit? He goes, if my fastball is at 96, my split finger is like around 85, 84, and my slider's around 89, I'm great. I literally wrote all those down and told the guy, this is what you're going to put every time he throws it.
I can't believe that this actually happened. Like, well, I mean, listen, it's kind of brilliant on your part. I mean, to just get inside his head and make him confident. But, like, I can't really believe any of it. I mean, I believe it, but...
That's you. Sometimes you have to do things like that to get your pitcher to respond, because there's times you walk out in the mound and you'll look at a pitcher and he'll look right through you. You ever get that look where somebody looks at you and they're not really looking at you? They're just on an island and
yeah,
they're
I've had
lost
that look from people before.
They're lost on an island,
maybe present company.
Yeah, and you're part psychiatrist, so. I remember, like, I went to the mound one day, and he was like, God, my fastball is dead. Does it seem like it's dead? I'm like, KB, it's fine. It is fine. Stop looking at the radar. And then I just, like, it started bugging me so much that him paying attention to that was not paying attention to the next pitch. So I just decided to do that. And I remember I told our manager, I'm like, listen, I'm telling the gun guy. So if it looks like he's hitting 97, he's not, but.
All right, so let me ask you a question in that vein. You're talking about playing psychiatrist a little bit. Chris Davis, what in the hell does that guy have to do to hit a baseball?
Go down to the minor leagues.
You think so?
Let me tell you something. If the guy was not making, what's his contract?
He's making a ton of money.
Oh, he'd be in the minor leagues.
Do you think that will really help him? Like, what? How do you start
no,
a
he
season?
Stinks.
But Paul, how do? You, but at some point,
my daughter started the season 0-50. I could hit left-handed
right, but,
and get
but
two.
But Paul,
hits.
At some point, Chris Davis was able to hit a baseball at a reasonably acceptable clip, and now he can't make contact.
Lay
like,
down
what
a bunt.
Is? What's wrong with him?
He stinks.
In-depth
he didn't deserve the money
with Paul LaDuca.
His bat stays in the zone for maybe a second. People talk about flat bat or whatever. He swings straight up. So basically, his swing path is in the zone for maybe less than half a second.
Okay, that's
so he, it needs to click. I'd have to show it to you on video, but his swing's awful. I understand you go in ruts, this and that, but a rut of 0-55 and you got a poor kid in AAA, I don't care about the money. That's what performance is called. He should not be in the
lineup.
Do you
think him going down to the minor leagues will help him at all?
Yes, he needs confidence. He needs to start hitting some home runs. People have done it. People have been sent back down to the minor leagues. He's not going to go there forever. Go there for 2-3 weeks. But if he keeps striking out in the minor leagues, what the fuck is he going to do for you in the big leagues?
Yeah, I mean, it's a historically bad start to a season.
Send him back to A-ball, too.
He's 49 at this point. 51.
Send him back to A-ball to get, like, more at-bats. 0-51.
I mean,
like,
how do you do? I mean, Paul, I mean, is there, tell everybody how hard that is. Like, 51 at-bats without a hit, you don't just run into one by accident.
Exactly. It's almost as bad as Jason Kendall 1 year had 600 at-bats and didn't hit a home run.
Wow.
You would think you'd run into one ball, right?
Like, I mean, anything, and it's like a bloop. Think, I mean, an infield single, like,
okay,
something.
So he's 0-51. How many times has he struck out?
Hold on. Matt Ford's researching it right now.
Hold on. I heard a shit.
Come on. We're going to keep talking while he looks it up. Just going to kill the airtime here.
It's okay.
Maddie's researching.
Chris Davis.
Slowly.
Chris Davis with a K.
15? But it goes back to last season. 15 strikeouts this season.
And so how many at-bats has he had this season?
29 at-bats this season.
I mean, are you
half of the time this
fucking for
out.
Fucking real? I struck out 30 times in 2001 with 400 at-bats.
You're a legendary hitter.
It doesn't matter. You are a major league player making that much money, and you're striking out more than half the time?
Woo!
How are you in the major leags? And there's probably some poor kid sitting in AAA going, can I get traded?
171 what?
170 million.
Somebody pay $160 million? Holy shit.
So he struck out 27 times
over 51 at-bats.
So there you go. So the other 24 times he's put it in play. That's insane. So for him not to get lucky once, I get it. But for those 24 times, for him to get to basically 200, he's got to get 4 fucking hits.
If you're the Orioles, do you like offer this guy like $50 million just to fake his own death? Like just cash?
No. You like sever his Achilles so the insurance can pay for it.
Sever his Achilles. So does he need to be like careful in the clubhouse?
I would be very careful because, like,
especially, you know,
I'm sure the Mets were praying that David Wright didn't come back so he didn't have to pay that. He came back for that one game. They probably had to pay him. But I wish this upon nobody. But you cannot tell me there's somebody in that organization that wishes that he does not get hurt so insurance can pay for that contract. Because I don't know if they're going to keep running him out there.
This might be worse than the Bobby Bonilla contract. This is atrocious.
But it's baseball. Like, that's what baseball is. They don't care about the strikeout anymore. They've scored record runs, and you know what the batting average is in the league? Still 240.
Pauly, all right, we're gonna move on from baseball. Before we get to our favorite time of the week, I've got one quick question for you.
Okay.
Because we're covering all sports right here. Saturday, Arkansas Derby down at Oak Lawn. Who you got?
Omaha Beach is going to be
me
tough
too.
In there. I know Improbable, the other Baffert, but
Improbable can suck it. I'm on Omaha Beach.
I'm with you too. I like the way he held off game winner, and I thought game winner might have hung a little bit in that race.
Mike
but
Smith,
then,
brother. I'm not betting against Mike Smith in these races.
No, but you know what? game winner was like five wide in the Santa Anita Derby, and then Mike Smith ran.
Atrocious how that horse got a terrible. Let me just say this about game winner. Those of you who are not interested in horse racing, get interested because you can make more money there than anywhere else. Game winner, I've been more impressed with him in his two losses than in the wins.
Yeah, and here's the pickle. Mike Smith needs to be on that horse. If Mike Smith was on that
horse. Yes, yes, yes.
If Mike Smith was on that horse.
But let me ask you this.
But then Mike Smith beats him with Roadster because the horse got a bad ride.
Game winner's been beaten twice by Omaha Beach and Roadster, both ridden by Mike Smith.
Yep.
But if Omaha Beach wins the Arkansas Derby, is Mike Smith really not taking that mount in the Kentucky Derby? Give him maybe a little bit of a middle finger to Bob Baffert, like, hey,
you took me off game winner.
Fuck you.
I don't think you can. Here's the deal. Omaha Beach is trained by legendary trainer Richard Mandela. And then Baffert has Roadster and he has Game Winner. And Mike has ridden Arrowgate, you know, Justify, you name it. Like,
he's ridden won everything there is to win.
For Bob. He doesn't have that much ties. Now, he's ridden some great horses for Mandela in the past, but not as many for Bob. So I would think the ties would go to Bob, and Richard would probably understand that. But also, if Omaha Beach blows out the Arkansas Derby, Mike's going to have a tough decision because I know Roadster is the real. Let me tell you something. There's three horses that can
I don't buy win Roadster.
There's three horses that can win the Kentucky Derby. I'm telling you right now. It's going to be Omaha. Somebody tweeted out the other day, there's 14 horses in the Bluegrass or whatever, and there's 10 horses in the Wood Memorial the other way around, and there's only six in the whatever in the Santa Anita Derby. I'll take the two in the Santa Anita Derby over those 24 in Omaha Beach. Right. Those three horses are going to win the Derby.
First, Roadster's not winning the Kentucky Derby. Second, you know, legendary
game
winner's
going to win the
Kentucky
Derby.
You know him?
Yeah.
He says Omaha Beach, I ran into him in Keeneland, no big deal, whatever. He says Omaha Beach is the finest horse he's ever laid his eyes on.
Alan Jerkins?
Yeah.
Wow.
Alan Jerkins at Keeneland said Omaha Beach is the finest horse he's ever laid his eyes on.
And if people don't know who Alan Jerkins is, as a legend.
So I think.
So the reason why I like Omaha Beach, and
I think it's
Omaha
Beach
horse racing,
game winner. That's what I think.
Because he was never letting Game Winner by, where Game Winner fought the whole way. I thought Game Winner might be a little bit of a hanger. He's not. Omaha Beach was not letting him by.
No,
and then he ran his balls off in the Santa Anita Derby, just got a bad ride. So I think Omaha Beach is the real deal. I'm with you.
All right, so we're on Omaha Beach in the Arkansas Derby on Saturday at Oaklawn. Now it's time for everyone's favorite part of their week, story time with Paul LaDuca. We've got two for you today. Paulie, let's start with you telling us about a little scam you used to pull on your minor league teammates to make some bread.
Yeah, this is a story my father reminded me of two nights ago, which is pretty crazy. We were talking, actually, about the Arkansas Derby. So when I was in the minor leagues in Bakersfield, you know, you're making $850 a month when you sign. You got four guys in an apartment, so you had to try to make some extra money. And I had pulled this trick a couple times in college, and it was called the Swami, sort of like, you know, Berman was on ESPN. So what we would do is the trick was pretty simple. So we're playing, I want to say it was the High Desert. At the time, they were the High Desert Mavericks. I was in the Cal League. One of the other guys on that team I had played with in college. So they all came over to my place to come, you know, party. So there's like about eight of us in there. And I always would wait till we all got really, really salty. Well, there was a Canadian pitcher on that team that was a bonus baby. And he was doing all these card tricks and he was popping off. And we were playing cards for money, this and that. And he, you know, he started to get a little bit, you know, salty after he had a couple beers, talking a lot of crap, and he was a bonus baby from Vancouver. So I said to him, I go, hey, I bet you know, $300 I can get a guy. You pick out any card out of that deck, I'll get a guy on the phone that can guess the card without me saying anything for $300. And he goes, you're full of shit, man. Stop bamboozling me. And I'm like, I'm not full of shit, bro. do you want to do this or not? You've been talking shit all night. We're playing poker basically for pennies. We're not making nothing. You got $300 in your pocket? And he goes, do you have $300 in your pocket? I said, no. I said, I'll go to the ATM right now. Ran to the ATM, got the $300. And I said, now do we want this on? He goes, yeah. So what happened was the guy picked the card. It was the nine of clubs. So now me and my father is the Swami. So we had this
family
down.
Hustle.
Yes, it's a family hustle. And what we would do is I would call my father, it didn't matter what time. So now it's like 3 a.m. And I call. I'm like, hello? So I remember calling and going, Swami? And as soon as I said Swami, my dad's half asleep. He's like, ugh. He goes, ace, 2, 3, 4, all the way till he gets to 9. And I'm like, Swami, is that you? And he goes, spades, hearts, diamonds, clubs. I'm like, Swami, there's a guy here that thinks that you can't guess this card. So now my father has given me the code. I have not said nothing. And he knows it's the nine of clubs. Now, here's the key. This is 1994. I'm in the Cal League. There's no cell phones back then, and you're on a landline. So for this to work, you gotta hit another number before they hit redial, because then they're going to find out who the Swami is. So now I give the phone to the guy, and the guy has it on speakerphone now, and my dad's telling him, hey, son of a bitch, I can't see the card. Hold the card up to the phone.
To a landline phone.
To a landline phone. And he goes, it's the nine of clubs, pay the guy, and hung up the phone. So I grabbed the phone real quick and dialed 411, and he, you know what I mean? So
they couldn't redial and get your
father's
number.
So they couldn't redial. So that was part of the trick. Well, this one time, I couldn't do it. And he hit redial, and he got our family answering machine. So now he knows. Oh, shit, I got just bamboozled by him and his dad, who's the Swami that read the card through the phone. And I just took the $300, and I booked down the lane. I was jumping fences. I was in backyards. I was coming back and forth.
Why didn't you just give him the $300 back?
Because he lost the bet. The guy gets the card.
Yeah, but you fucking rigged it.
It didn't matter. He hit redial. He's like, oh, well, the Swami's your father? I'm like, I don't know. That was the last thing I dialed yesterday morning when we came back, this and that. I had to come back
to
the apartment.
You were just on the phone.
Exactly. But I worked it.
All right. So that's story number one. Story number two involves Kevin Brown and David Ross, if I'm not mistaken, during your time with the Dodgers, right?
Yeah, this is David. I actually DM'd David and on Twitter, and then I texted him, and he's going to come on the program either next week or the week after, because I was asking about this story to make sure it was him, and he goes, yeah, he remembers it vividly. And we were driving. We had a road trip. I was like Toronto, Detroit. We were driving from Toronto to Detroit, and it was a family trip. So the wives were on the first bus and all the players were on the second bus. Well, the first bus with all the wives, it was very calm. The second bus, that the guys that didn't bring their wives was getting pretty rowdy. They were getting drunk. And so Kevin Brown calls the traveling secretary at the time, who was Sean Rochow, and goes, hey, all of us are hungry on this back bus. How much longer we got? And he's like, we got an hour and a half. He's like, all right, we're stopping, or there's a Burger King in 2 miles. We're going to stop, and I'm going to buy everybody food. And Sean goes, it's 3 a.m. And Kevin goes, I don't care. Stop the buses. So Kevin made the buses stop. Now, the rookies at the time were David Ross. So he sent David Ross in to a Whopper. I don't even know where we were.
Into
a Burger King. Between Toronto and Detroit. I don't even know where we're at.
Do you know what country you were in?
No. To order over 200 Whoppers. Okay? David Ross comes walking back out and says, they are heating up the grill, but it's going to take them over an hour to an hour and a half to make 200 Whoppers. There's only two people there. There's no way they can get this done. So Kevin Brown's drunk, and he's like, we're staying, we're eating. Well, now the traveling secretary is like, no, this is not happening. We are getting out of here. There's room service when we get to the hotel. So the family bus takes off. The player bus, there's guys outside of the player bus. They're supposed to be following each other. There's no such thing as, like, you know, maps on phones at this time. Like, you got to, like, so now the players jump back on the bus and start following the family bus. And Kevin is pissed. He's calling, why didn't we eat? And I could hear Rochow, our traveling secretary, going, bro, we got to get to the hotel to get to sleep.
It's making me, like, really want a Whopper.
Right? So now we get to the hotel. We're in Detroit now at 4 in the morning, I want to say. And Kevin Brown comes off the back bus. Now, when you get to a major league hotel, your traveling secretary has all the keys. So what he does is he goes straight to the hotel. He has this whole package with all the keys, and he lays them all out. Out of the corner of my eye, I see Kevin, and he's raging, and he's got a Bud Light in one hand and a Coors Light in the other. And the Coors Light is open and full, and Rochow just starts running towards the hotel. Kevin Brown threw a 99-mile-an-hour fastball with that Coors Light and drilled him right in the straight in the back.
What? 100%. He hit the traveling secretary in the back with a Coors Light?
I mean, smoked him. I mean, it's like he got shot, really, like, literally from a tower. Down goes Frazier.
Jesus.
Right? So he gets up. We're all dying laughing because we know what it's about because he didn't stop at Burger King. He didn't wait. So we all get our keys, and I'm sitting there just waiting because I got to see how this plays out. And Kevin would always get the suite, so he was the last person. So everybody goes up to their room, and now room service, he goes, hey, is room service open? And the lady goes, no. And now he's even more fuming. He goes, what time does it open? And the lady goes, it opens at 6 o'clock. And it was, I think, at 4:15 at this time. And he goes, I'd like to order some breakfast for myself, because obviously he was starving. Then he ordered breakfast at 6, 6:15, 6:30, 6:45, 7, 7:15, 7:30, 8, 8:15, 8:30, all the way up to 9 o'clock, every 15 minutes on the dial to the traveling secretary's room to wake him up.
Wow. He really did not like that guy, did he?
No. It didn't matter what he was making, but it was like over $300 in breakfast he sent to his room. And like and he tipped the lady at the front desk, was like, what? And he goes, where is the kitchen people? Are they here? She goes, Jesus. No. He goes, he pulled $200 out of the pocket and he goes, give this to the lady and make sure she keeps delivering them, because he was afraid they were just going to stop delivering them. And like, if you went on his floor, there was literally 10 trays of breakfast just sitting outside of his
room. Holy shit. How did he respond to that the next day?
You don't respond to Kevin Brown. You just take
it. Really? Did you just take it from Kevin Brown?
Yeah, he was the man. I didn't give a shit. As long as he won us 20 games, you can throw beers at anybody.
Did he ever throw a beer at you?
No, but he told me one time, I'll never forget, he kept shaking me off and shaking me off and shaking me off. And then I went to the mound one time. It was like I was a rookie. And I said, what do you want to throw here? And he told me, why don't you just fucking go back down there and throw down the fingers and I'll decide. I'm like, okay, Mr. Brown.
Wow. So did you guys get along? Or?
But then after that, yeah. Then like he was... He got sort of labeled as such a dick.
Kevin Brown has a reputation of being kind of an asshole, and he sounds kind of like an asshole from this story.
But, like, he was such a good asshole. Like, I can't explain it.
Paul, what makes someone a good asshole?
A guy that puts on his spikes, that's making a what he was making, puts on his spikes every day at 6:30, even when he's not pitching.
So he showed up for work? Congratulations.
Showed up for stretching every day. The two most professional guys I ever played with were him and Tom Glavine. Two rock stars.
Tom Glavine can suck it.
Okay, I get it. It's the last, you Met fans with the last game, forget it. But two guys that were dominant showed up for stretching, was always out there for the first pitch. Kevin would have his cleats on, and he would try to figure out if he could see if the pitchers were pitching, tipping their pitches. And you know what else I loved about him? He was the worst hitter I ever saw. And he would actually go down to the cage and work on his hitting day after day and became actually a pretty good hitter. He was an intense teammate. When he pitched, you did not talk to him, but he was a teammate you wanted because you won. You know what I mean?
He's the kind of guy you like on your team, you hate if he's on another team.
100%. That's nail on head right there.
All right, that feels like a good place to wrap this up. Thank you, everybody, for listening to The Favorites. Please download, subscribe, leave reviews on Apple Podcasts. We're also available on radio.com/TheActionNetwork and anywhere else you get your podcasts. For Paul LaDuca, I'm Blackjack Fletcher. Until next time, love you.